I would like to invite all of my listeners, supporters, friends, and guests to join me for the Empowerment Zone Live on September 30th, 2021 at 6 p.m. EST. Please visit ramonahouston.com/podcast for more details.
Welcome to the Empowerment Zone with Ramona Houston, where we zone in on Black and Brown relations and our journey to empowering our communities.
Today is September 15th, 2021, the first day of Hispanic Heritage Month, and we are celebrating here at the Empowerment Zone. In fact, we celebrate the Latinx community 365 days out of the year. There are so many great achievements and accomplishments of the Latinx community. As you know from listening to the Empowerment Zone, individuals in this community continue to contribute to the development of our communities, nation, and world. And today we are beginning our celebration of Hispanic Heritage Month by talking to Edward Vargas, who's doing great work in the community. His topic today is self-identity, working beyond labels, and developing BIPOC collaborations. Ed Vargas, BSc, JD, lives in the San Francisco Bay Area. He is an international speaker, author, mentor, consultant for diversity, equity, and inclusion, and tech for social good impacts. Ed is making an impact in his community. He's head of the Latinx and Employee Resource Group Practice at CTR Factor, a leadership, a diversity, equity, and inclusion consulting firm. He is president of Vargas & Associates Strategic Planning and Communications Consulting Group. He is a mentor at Miller Center for Social Entrepreneurship at Santa Clara University. He also serves on the Latinx Research Center's Community Leadership Advisory Board, College of Education and Counseling Psychology at Santa Clara University, and he is co-lead for the We Are All Human Foundation's Hispanic Star Bay Area Club. He is a contributing author of Hispanic Stars Rising, The New Face of Power, Volume 1. Welcome to the Empowerment Zone, Edward.
Ramona, I've been looking forward to being in your Empowerment Zone, and thank you again for doing what you do. It's just in what we're where we're at right now in our world, in the country, it's more important than ever to reach out and talk to people, even if they have a different opinion. So I'm happy to discuss some of my career, some of the things I think your audience would be interested in doing, and would love to give them a call to action at the end.
Thank you so much. So can you tell our audience a little bit about yourself? You know, we always like our guests to tell a little bit about their personal and professional background so that our audience can get to know who you are.
Well, great. So one of the things that I didn't put in this bio, but it's a part of who I am, is that I grew up in a household where we heard all kinds of music. My mom would, one of her best friends was from Louisiana. So we had country music. My dad loved to sing. So he would play and sing along with some of the songs. And my brother was this person who just became this amazing drummer. So my brother and I got into playing cover band hits. We grew up in a Bay Area where Carlos Santana came from, Journey. You can go down the list of all the Bay Area groups. So to me, one thing that I've had throughout my whole life was that moment when you're there in an audience, let's call it a wedding, let's call it a corporate event or even a festival. That energy, when you're a live musician and you start playing and you see people getting up, you don't even tell them anything. They hear the music, they get up and they start dancing. And music to me is one of the most powerful dynamics that we have. It's something that'll calm yourself if you're in those moments that you need to kind of refresh and get started. But when you're with a group of people, it doesn't matter what age you are, it doesn't matter what your culture is. If you hear that music and you want to get up and dance, everybody's there right next to each other. And that to me is such a special feeling. I try to bring that across in the different programs and projects that I have. One of the things that was an interesting moment was my parents took us to go see a gentleman named Louis Armstrong. And I was, because of hearing things like mariachi music, I wanted to learn how to play the trumpet. And I was taking trumpet lessons and playing in a little grade school, elementary school band. But I asked my dad, as we were listening to Louis Armstrong, I said, I'd like to talk to him and learn about what could I do to learn how to play trumpet better? And his eyes got big and he goes, you want to talk to Louis Armstrong? And I said, yeah, I do. So he said, okay. So at the end of the program, the end of the show, he and I walked to the back of the stage area and we saw Louis' manager. And my dad said, my son is learning how to play trumpet and he'd like to talk and meet Louis Armstrong. And again, the same reaction. His eyes got this big. He says, what? And so I at that point where we were sitting, the door to the dressing room was open and there was Louis sitting and he's looking at us, seeing that he couldn't hear us, but he heard me interacting with his manager and the manager walks in and you could see the reaction is that this manager is saying, there's a kid outside and he wants to talk to you. And all of a sudden Louis looked right at me and he motioned to his hand, come on in. So that was the moment where, to me, it was somebody that just asked a question. And here was this gentleman that had battled all the racism you could think about. Mm-hmm. And he talked to me. Mm-hmm. And it was the kind of moment that I carried with me my whole life. Mm-hmm. It's something that I want to share that with people. I want mm-hmm. people to know that music can change your life. Music mm-hmm. is something that brings people together. And if you can find that energy, if you can find your Louis Armstrong, if you can find a mentor, that's what I'm about these years. There are things that I kid people, I tell them, you know, I used to work in a tech startup company called AT&T. And at AT&T, they have something called employee resource groups. So aside from the work that you do, it's an opportunity to collaborate. It's an opportunity in your own communities across the country to partner with your employees and help a local cause. So I was active in 5 different employee resource groups. I was involved with a Hispanic group called ASEMOS. I partnered with the African-American group called Network. The largest ERG there at AT&T was called Women of AT&T. Inspire Asian was another group that I partnered with. And what we would really enjoy doing was each group would have a particular program or project in their local communities. And then once a year, we'd come together at a national ERG conference and we'd share our best practices. And so we'd be able to learn and develop and take it to the next level each time. So if there was a ERG in Atlanta that was African American or an ERG in San Francisco that was Asian American, they wanted to share what they were doing so that the other ERGs could also think about applying those same principles or bringing community groups together. And so those are the kind of things that I'm really involved in, particularly now that I've left AT&T. I'm really, you know, interested in bringing groups of people together. It's something where when I was in college, for example, one of the moments that I had, again, this enlightenment was I played football and I went to an all boys Jesuit high school in San Jose, California, called Bellarmine College Preparatory. And I was lucky to get in. I'd never thought about going to college. I thought I'd just, you know, have a job and that would be something I'd be happy with. But one teacher told me, you know, hey, your grades are really good. You're good in athletics. Why don't you apply to Bellarmine? So once I got in there, I really got involved with the program. I had a real brotherhood with other athletes and people that were there, some lifelong friendships that I still have today. But I not only wanted to play football, but I actually had an offer to get a scholarship, a full ride scholarship to play football at a college here in the Bay Area. But I needed to have a knee operation before, you know, leaving my senior year. Unfortunately, after 2 weeks at home, recuperating from that knee operation, I couldn't breathe. I didn't know what was going on. So my parents, we had an ambulance come to the house, pick me up. They took me in and they started treating me for pneumonia because I couldn't even take a full breath of air. And for about 36 hours while they were running some tests. I just was lying there in the bed. Here I am, you know, at the opportunity to go to college, first in my family to do that. But the experience of this could all end and I don't know what the problem is. That really made me start thinking about the future and what would I be doing? What could I do for myself? What could I do for others if I got past this situation? So when they came back and they took the tests and they said, we found that you had blood clots from your knee operation. And those blood clots, which doesn't happen all the time, they passed through my heart. And the pain that I was feeling were those blood clots on the walls of my lungs. So once they determined what it was, they gave me some blood thinner. I got through that situation. But then as I'm going to college, I'm thinking, you know, what can I do? Maybe here going to get through college. I'll be the first in my family to do that. What can I do? So I set three goals for myself in college. One, I wanted to travel and do business internationally. That was one. One for me was, again, you know, taking a look at my life, going through that experience. I wanted to be, whether it would be an executive or a senior management position at whatever organization I worked at when I was 30, I set that goal for myself. And then I wanted to pay it forward as best I could, having, you know, had that experience with blood clots. And that moment in terms of making that commitment to myself, people at some point, your management style, I became an analytical driver. It's somebody that would always take a look at the issues, the facts, and try to come up with a plan to get to the next level. That got me not only to get a double major in my undergraduate, I became I got a Bachelor of Science of Commerce with a major in marketing and business administration. But then that also motivated me to try to do something beyond that. So I took a year off, saved some money, and got into law school. So I wanted to work toward getting a law degree and seeing how I could pay it forward in that area. Unfortunately, in my second year, my mother, we found she had cancer. And then shortly after that, my father had a heart attack. So things just, my world just flipped upside down. Again, thinking about today, you know, 2 years ago, nobody even heard the word COVID, but it impacted everybody, not just in your neighborhood, but worldwide. So there are moments in life where you have these challenges, you may not have a plan, but you need to come together. You need to think through and identify what kinds of things can change. What can you do to make that situation the best you can?
Yeah, that's a great segue into our conversation about working beyond labels, but at the same time, embracing your own identity, however you decide to define yourself, right? And that's an evolutionary process. A lot of people, you know, we come from different backgrounds, different experiences, and we're always in the process of defining who we are. You know, we Yes. define ourselves differently when we're in elementary school versus how we do in college. And so many times these labels end up becoming barriers if you're not careful and conscious about how you choose to express yourself. And so let's talk about how we can develop collaborations from between different groups. You talked about developing BIPOC collaborations, and for our audience, BIPOC is B, it's an acronym, B-I-P. OC, standing for Black, Indigenous, and People of Color. So let's talk about that. What are your strategies, or what are your ideas about developing collaborations among people of different groups? You talked about how Louis Armstrong really helped you to find your voice. You called it find your music. You encourage people to find your music. He helped you to find your voice just by welcoming you into the room, right?
Yes, it did.
And you talked about your experience with employee resource groups, ERGs, also known as ERGs, which exist in many corporations. So what have you learned through your experiences? How can we be more effective as individuals and communities in building collaborations?
Well, I just gave you an example. I was listening to you. And so one of the key things when you talk to somebody that may have a different viewpoint, you know, you want to create a situation where you both can share your ideas. The challenge that we have these days is that people are polarized. And I point a lot of that to things like social media. You know, back in the day, I was involved with groups. Here in San Francisco, I was president of something called Latinos in Communications. And that was an organization of people that were working either at television stations, radio stations, newspapers that were Hispanic. And one of the tasks I thought was important was that there was one newspaper that when there was a celebration like Cinco de Mayo, they would put all the things about who was there and the people and the artists that performed at the festival. But then the last paragraph would include, and there were 24 killings in San Francisco. There were these, you know, fights and accidents. And so I went to we had a meeting with the editorial board, and I said, that is nothing to do with what that activity was. Mm-hmm. That may be for the city and county of San Francisco, but that's not the place to put it because you're giving a different perception. Those weren't related from that activity. So we got them to understand that. Mm-hmm. And so to me, so much of what we're dealing with today are false perceptions or people have stereotypes. So in the context of other things that I've been doing over my year, currently I'm now, as I mentioned, I'm working with the We Are All Human Foundation's Hispanic Star. We have hubs. Think of it like an ERG group, but instead of a corporation, it's this foundation. And the key message there is that, guess what? We are all human beings. You know, here in California, diversity is very, very much the norm. My wife is Japanese American. My grandson is Japanese American, Mexican American, Filipino, Hawaiian. And that's not unusual here in California. Whereas when I've traveled to other parts of the US, particularly when I was working for a large corporation and I would take flights and land in Chicago and go to New York or wherever, you know, I would see people that didn't have that diversity there in their own neighborhood. And I would literally be the ambassador for Hispanics because they never met somebody like me. Oh, you going to law school now and you have this? And yeah, really. Oh, and by the way, I play guitar and I've been in a band too. So to me, it's the opportunity to have these, some people call them courageous conversations. You're seeing this dynamic at corporations where senior executives, if it comes from the PR department, or it comes from, you know, hey, you know, we're the good guys. We're gonna increase. We want more diversity, but there's no mechanism. There's no measurement, and so that's a lot of what I'm involved in now. Is how do we not only talk to executives, but show them, for example, that Hispanics, you know, so many negative stereotypes on television today, but if you look at the gross domestic product, the GDP, not just of people from heritage in Mexico, but all Latin American people in the U.S., that amount of GDP, if you took that and separated that out from the entire U.S., that would be the eighth largest GDP in the world, right behind the country of France. So those are the kind of statistics that I want to, during Hispanic Heritage Month, and to your point, not just for this month, it's year round. And it's the opportunity for us to educate some people if they don't know about that. Some companies, for example, like Nike, Procter & Gamble, consumer goods companies within the Hispanic promise that we've shared, it's a non-binding agreement, but they see that Hispanic families are larger and they're much younger than the average family in the U.S. So when you take a look at where's your growth segment, if you put your marketing hat on, where are you going to get the most new customers? Maybe it's the Hispanic segment. And to me, if you've ever heard music from Carlos Santana, he's, you know, grew up here in the Mission District in San Francisco, but it's an Afro-Cuban feel. Mm-hmm. That's what set him aside from the traditional, you know, Mexican music. And people that have that Afro-Latino blood, they're into percussion. That's how his group started, is that he heard people just playing congas, and it was that rhythm is what he wanted as the core of what his music is. And he's still, you know, very successful now, going back on tour again. But it's that music that reaches people, you know, and let go of the label. How does it make you feel? Mm-hmm. That's the kind of thing that I really, that energy back and forth when you accomplish something. And I even did something, it's at AT&T. I became in the national organization. I was the national EVP for community outreach. And one of the things that I did, again, up to here with the negative stereotypes, you know, people that were Hispanic in our group, we were at a leadership conference in San Francisco. And I had a volunteer videographer, and I just did some interviews. We had a consent agreement, and I talked to them and I said, tell me your story. Tell me where you're from. Tell me about your family. Tell me about your goals. Oh, by the way, you also have been working for AT&T for 10, 15 or more years, and you're a successful person. So I created something called Hacemos Latino Diversity Stories. We edited that and we put those segments out. We put two out a month for celebrating the 30th year of our ERA. And I thought to myself, well, you know, that's great that we're telling that to our other, you know, co-employees, but we need to get this message out to a broader audience. So we created a YouTube channel. So Hacemos, ERG has a YouTube channel, and you could look up in YouTube, Hacemos Latino Diversity Stories, and you can see the people that were there. And I also wanted to include the fact that not everybody in Hacemos had to have a Hispanic last name. Mm-hmm. So one of my coworkers, who is a second generation Chinese employee, she's just been this tremendous person. She even got the Jefferson Award nationally for all the community work that she's done over the years. So if she had a project, yep, yeah, I'd volunteer and I'd help her. If I had a project, yep, she'd volunteer and help me. So in that context, it was the opportunity to partner together and tell those stories. I included Mei Jean Go, who was Chinese American, because she was on a team that I had. We had a partnership with the president of external affairs in California for AT&T. His challenge was, how do we get support for more cell towers in the Salinas Valley? So we came up with this idea. Let's have this program called Adelante. So there's Adelante and there's technology. Adelante. Mm-hmm. So what we did is that we reached out to the United Farm Workers there in that Salinas area. And we said, the children that you have that are in college, let's, you know, have those children, those people apply, and we'll give them training from the Coro Foundation, leadership training once a month. Let's give them an opportunity to take courses online from Udacity. That's a component of AT&T University. So it's training, but this training, instead of going 4 years for a computer science degree, it would be 6, 7, or 8 courses that would give you a nano degree. Like if you wanted to be a web developer or some specific tech job, you can get that experience. And then my role was to bring other employees from AT&T in our Hacemos group that were familiar with, like I am, with business plans. And we would explain what a business plan was. And that was the mechanism that the president of the United Farm Workers and the president of AT Internal Affairs gave them a challenge. And so they needed to use a business plan to come up with a recommendation or recommendations to address that challenge. And then we hosted them. Their local representative took them to Sacramento. They took a tour of the state capitol. And then that day after the program ended, they gave their pitch or their recommendations to the president of the United Farm Workers, the people in the External Affairs Department, and then the coaches that were there from our organization. So we had Mei Jean Go that was involved with us. I had an African-American gentleman who was best friend, was the VP in Hacemos. So he got on the board because he wanted to partner with his best friend. So those are the kinds of relationships that I really try to encourage. Is it for us to go from where we're at today, whether it's a local community issue, a need that there is a gap. I tell people I feel like I'm right now in a solar eclipse. We've never had the resources aligned with the people and the needs that more so than we have right now. we have, you know, some
change. Those are some great, great examples of collaborations and how you worked where you were in order to create an environment where people can work together. And that is great advice for many of our listeners. You talked about share your ideas, be able to listen to each other, A lot of times we're not listening. Address false perceptions and stereotypes. Have courageous conversations, and also consider partnering with other individuals and organizations. Those are great pieces of advice for how to create collaborations among different people and groups, and even more specifically, creating a BIPOC conversations. So, with that being said, if people want to get in contact with you, how would they reach you? What information do you want to share with our audience if they want to reach out to you to get in touch with you?
The best way I recommend to everybody is there's a social platform called LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. So if you can get onto LinkedIn and look up Edward Vargas, you'll see my background pop up and you can connect with me that way. I'm oftentimes participating in panels on different topics. I'll be doing one with all the employees of Google and their employee resource group called OLA, which is their Hispanic group. I'll be there at a Google facility on the 21st of this month. And that'll be something that may be broadcast even worldwide with all their employees. So reach out to me on LinkedIn. And I'll be happy to respond. There are some things, for example, as I mentioned to you, I love paying it forward. You can even go to my LinkedIn and download on my file there. When I speak to young people, I also help start something called High Tech Day for AT&T, the Asemos group. And that is bringing in local high school students to an AT&T facility, giving them STEM workshops, opening their eyes, like in my experience, have you thought about going to college? Have you thought about a STEM career? There are so many tech companies here in the Bay Area, Silicon Valley. There are so many tech companies that even you don't have to live in California anymore. You know, with COVID and people working from home, you could, you know, have that opportunity if you get that background and training. So I offer that as an opportunity. People can download.
So Ed, if there's more than one Ed Vargas, how will they know which one you are on LinkedIn?
If you put my name Edward Vargas in LinkedIn, mm-hmm. and then you click on all results, you can just see my background pop up and my picture pop up.
Okay. Sounds great. Well, thank you so much for joining us on the Empowerment Zone. We really enjoyed our conversation with you.
And I'll share your link with other people that I think they can also add to you. And again, thank you for doing what you do. We need to have these kinds of opportunities going forward as well.
Thank you. I would like to invite all of my listeners, supporters, friends, and guests to join me for the Empowerment Zone Live on September 30th, 2021 at 6 p.m. EST. Please visit ramonahouston.com/podcast for more details. So Ed, we're in our college strategies portion of our interview. So we want you to give us one piece of advice for students on how they can be successful in college. Can you tell us what college you attended? What was your major and your degree? And then what is that strategy you would give students for college success?
Thank you. So be a lifelong learner for one. Mm-hmm. So in my career, I started at Santa Clara University. I got my degree in marketing and business administration. I came back and got my law degree from there. And now I've reached back to I've re-engaged with the university, and I'm on their, I'm a mentor with the Miller Center for Social Entrepreneurship, and I'm also a board member of their Latinx Research Center, which is part of the Education and Counseling Psychology Department there at Santa Clara University. So I tell students, I actually give them a handout when I do this live with them or on a webinar. You know, think of a triangle. Think of the at the top of the triangle, where do you want to be in 5 years? What can you visualize what you want to be doing? So that's your goal. Excuse me, that's your vision. And then to get to your vision, set some goals for yourself. You know, if I'm, you don't just wake up 5 years later and there you are, you know, so set some goals. And then once you articulate, and on the back of the page that I hand out, I have them write it down. It's not just up here or over here, write it down so you can focus on it. So you have your vision, your goals, and then you need to set some objectives. And when you set those objectives, set some timelines or milestones. So if you've got these goals and you've got your objectives, where do you need to be in the first 6 months? Where do you need to be 3.5 years from now? So you set that, lay that out. And then once you have those objectives, set some strategies. The cost to go to college is so much more expensive than when it was when I went to school. So you're gonna need a financial strategy. Talk to people about where do I get scholarships? That's something you need to build out. So strategies is the next level. And then you've prioritized your time, and then you're looking at your activities. You just don't wake up in the morning and say, what do I do today? So you've got your vision, your goals, objectives, strategies, and your activities. And that's what I give them as a way to define who you want to be, where you want to be 5 years from now.
That's great advice. So be a lifelong learner, and then you must set your vision, your goals, objectives, strategies, and activities in order that you can accomplish that vision that and be the person that you want to be. Thank you so much, Ed. It was a pleasure having you on the Empowerment Zone, and you're always welcome back.
Thank you. Take care.
A special thank you to the incredible team of the Empowerment Zone. Terry Ungully, theme song, NADWORKS, digital support, and of course, our featured guest.
If you enjoyed my podcast, please subscribe. We are on all of your favorite podcast platforms. Be sure to rate us on Apple Podcasts too. Thank you for your continued support.